KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
KUOW Seattle.
You're saying there are two kinds of marriages, the full marriage and then the sort of skim milk marriage.
Every concern was addressed along the way, and I think the next natural step for all of us is going to be a lot of hard work. But I'm extremely confident that we have the team and the people in place to make this a reality.
I will be a proud participant in the continued payment of investment in our schools through this beautiful amber nectar of the gods.
We heard Jay Inslee talking about his proposals, including a beer tax. We heard Kevin Johnson holding on to his Sacramento team as tight as he can as the mayor and former NBA player. And the SCOTUS discussions, the Supreme Court talking about same-sex marriage. All the things and more that we will talk about today on the program with Joni Balter, assistant political editor for the Seattle Times.
Good
to see you again.
Good to see you again.
Welcome back. Knute Berger, Crosscut Magazine, Moss Magazine. Yeah, why not? Crosscut.com writes the MOSFET
break news
column.
On this show.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Also author of a book about the Space Needle. And Eli Sanders, drone captain.
That's right. I've got Eli, the drone with me here today.
Eli J. Sanders, associate editor at The Stranger. But, yes, you have a drone.
Right.
Can you make it go up in the air?
I can. Would you like me to do it right
yes.
now?
Yes.
Okay. And I was just about to tweet a picture of you, Steve Scher, staring down the nose camera of my drone. So what I have is a Parrot AR drone. That we've been talking a lot on the show about the police drones, the Seattle police drones that were sent back by the mayor after an outcry. And we've also talked a little bit about overseas drone strikes. But I just finished a long freelance article that looks at what happens when every citizen of the country can buy a drone, because this is another question that we haven't really explored. The president has his drones and the police have the drones that they want. But really, right now, any person like me can go online and buy a drone for $300 and fly it around. So here's a drone that was bought for me while I was doing this freelance article, which you can find at the magazine. It's an online only magazine, and you can download the app easily from the iPhone store. And I've been flying it around and playing with it, and here's what it sounds like to take off. Hold on one second.
Flying it in the studio, what could go wrong?
Good idea. Is there any equipment here that we care about?
Oops.
This is why the police had so much trouble justifying that they could deal with crime. It's taking a little time to launch the thing. Here we go.
Okay. Oh, Nelly. It sounds like my vacuum cleaner. Don't talk to me like that.
It's like a ceiling fan.
So this is the drone flying around.
And Eli is flying the drone.
And now I'm going to try to set it down.
Yeah, gently, Eli. It costs $300.
All right.
Forget that. We have.
Actually,
we have...
I'm just going to catch it.
Oh, very close.
There it is. Landing on the...
Stop droning.
This is why he has to practice. Now tell me something.
Well,
did you have the camera going while you were doing that?
Yeah. So while it was flying around in here.
We'll put a little film. Amina just took a little video of it, so we'll throw a few videos up there.
Cool. And I'll also end up with the drone's eye video of that flight.
Excellent.
And I can put it up online as well.
We've been surveilled.
That will be excellent.
Yeah. So you have been surveilled. This is what people were worried about.
I didn't sign any releases at all, did you? I didn't.
This drone has a high-definition camera in its nose. It's called the Parrot, so where the nose would be on the Parrot, it's got a high-definition camera. And it's also got a camera mounted on the bottom of it that you can peer down at yourself from.
It adds new meaning to the nose, right?
Yes, oh, man. We're gonna have puns galore. How long does the battery last on this object?
This is one of the things that actually made me worried a lot less about drone technology, at least right now. The battery on this lasts about 10 minutes, and then you need to recharge it. So if you are worried about your neighbor kid getting a parrot and hovering over your backyard for hours and hours and hours, it's not going to happen yet.
He can only do it for 10 minutes.
He can only do it for 10 minutes, then he has to go recharge his battery.
One of those annoying batteries.
Are there any legal... I know we've talked about this. So private citizen flies a drone up into the 10th story of an apartment, hovers there, and looks in the window.
We had used that example for the police one, right?
Right.
There are a lot of questions about the legality of this, and the answers are actually more worrying than you would imagine. So the scenario that you proposed, I fly this drone, say, from, you know, a sidewalk, so the sidewalk right of way, straight up along the side of an apartment building, and point the nose camera looking in one of the windows. That's not much different than, you could argue, than me walking by a street-level apartment and looking in the window.
Whoa.
So this is untested area, and or this is an untested area of the law. One of the more interesting things, and a very common question that comes up, and in fact, a question that came up in the really off-the-rails meeting that was held by the Seattle Police Department when they tried to introduce the Dragonflyer drones earlier this year, I guess. Someone stood up and said, well, if the police fly this drone over my backyard without a warrant, don't I have a right to shoot it out of the sky? And this is a very good question. If I fly my drone over your backyard, Steve, without your permission, do you have a right to shoot it down or throw something at it
baseball,
and knock it down?
Baseball bat
well,
down.
How high do you get, and what's the...
This is one of the questions, because right now, things fly over your house all the time. You've got jets flying over your house, and if the autopilot is engaged on the jet, it's essentially a drone. There's lots of case law that says the police department can fly a helicopter over your house without your permission and peer down into your backyard without a warrant, no problem. So no case law yet has decided how low a drone can fly over your property before it's trespassing. And essentially, what Ryan Callow, a robotics and law professor at the University of Washington, told me while I was researching this story is that you really have to accept right now that stuff flies over your house, and that stuff is going to begin to include drones like this. Now, pretty soon, I think we will have cases that test just how low a drone can fly over your backyard. But at the moment, you don't have as many rights to knock down a drone over your backyard as you might think you do.
Well, think about some of the search and rescue that happens over Lake Washington, and that, or even just a police search for somebody who's loose in the park or loose in the backyards, you know, like a criminal thing. And they get the helicopters out. And so they are looking down either, you know, at your yard. I don't know. They're not close like this. Mm-hmm. There's a distance thing. But this is going on. So it's hard to say how they're going to define this.
And when you're talking about search and rescue uses of helicopters, say, there are all kinds of good search and rescue uses that you could think of for drones. And there are also a lot of good uses for drones in natural disasters, say, or even the unnatural disaster in Fukushima in Japan after the earthquake and tsunami there. The U.S. actually flew a Global Hawk drone over the Japanese reactor to help monitor it. You can imagine all kinds of uses domestically for government drones in terms of things that we wouldn't mind, looking at hurricanes as they're developing and so on. But you can also very quickly and easily imagine countless scenarios that would really worry you. For example, someone taking a drone that's a little more sophisticated than this one, some future iteration of this Parrot that I just bought online, and mounting a weapon on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we are armed with arms. We'll soon be armed with drones. You're up for that. You want a drone, don't
you? If you outlawed drones, only outlaws will have drones.
That's right.
I mean, we're already in a world where the laws and privacy are juggling with each other. I mean, you can look at Google Earth, images taken from satellites, and from the standpoint of the general public, we tend to think of satellites as, you know, maybe being able to shoot the, you know, take a picture of the roof of your house. But the technology really allows much more fine-grained detail if somebody, the government or somebody wanted that. You've got Google going up and down streets, and, of course, they're public streets. And the laws are different in terms of what you have to have permission to do if you're a private citizen. You can't tape audio. You have to have somebody's permission to take
right.
audio, but not video.
Yeah. Is that right? You don't have to have the permission for video.
Well, think about
the same way. So so you can street cameras or if you're surveilling a house, you can take video, but you can't take audio.
Interesting.
So there's, you know, a lot of these legal issues are going to be raised as the technology gets, as you know, I mean, computers used to just belong to the Pentagon, and now we all have these powerful, massive computers on our in our pockets. Mm-hmm. Same thing is going to happen with drone technology. It's the Pandora's box is open, and we're going to have to find a way to live with them.
Well, think about cops with cameras on their uniforms. They already have mounted to the front of the car, security cameras catching everything, and then every single one of us with an iPhone able to photograph, video, anything that's going on.
And the way to think about this, actually, a lot of people said, is as a flying iPhone.
Well, I was just going to say, did we mention how you're controlling this drone?
I may have mentioned it quickly, but I'll say it again. What I'm doing is controlling this drone from my iPhone. And it sends a live video feed down to my iPhone that is then recording a video of everything that's happening. So we watch the drone on this video, or we can rewatch it fly around the room here and make a not-so-elegant landing on top of the microphone.
I should point out, this thing is as intimidating as it actually looks like a bike helmet with propellers.
I just tweeted a photograph of Steve Scher staring down the nose camera of the drone. He did not look intimidated. At Eli J. Sanders is my Twitter feed. One really interesting thing that I learned as I was researching all this for this story is that the cell phone boom actually created the personal drone boom. The tiny accelerometers and gyroscopes that have now become cheap and affordable, and tiny lithium batteries that have now become cheap and affordable that make your iPhone work, are what power the drone. And the economies of scale that were created to support that boom in, again, batteries, accelerometers, and gyroscopes ended up making technology that's light enough to then put on a small little quadcopter, which is what I have here, and fly around. But so the way to think about this is as a flying iPhone for the moment, and also as something that is essentially an offspring of the iPhone. It's an iPhone with four rotors mounted to it.
That's wild.
Looks like a baby hydro to me.
Social media takes to the air. See, it's not a drone, it's social media.
It's social media.
Well,
don't worry.
If you look at some of the advertisements and the advertising YouTube videos on the Parrot site, they market it as flying Facebook in a way.
There you go.
Oh, exactly. They don't. Really?
They don't say that, but that's they show the drone flying around the city and nosing up to your friends and, you know, meeting new people with it and so on.
Facebook without privacy settings.
I don't think that's how the average person will react to them, by the way. If you're walking down the street and a stranger's drone noses up to you taking your video, I don't think it's going to look the way it looks on the Parrot advertising.
Oh, they got a slick Facebook page with that parrot. You should look it up. Yeah. What have you been using your drone for?
Well, I've learned to do flips with it. This thing will do a flip, and I could, if you don't value your microphones very much, I could take it up and try to do a flip here in the room. I flew it around the city a little bit, but there are rules right now. You have to use them below 400 feet and away from populated places that, you know, you could hurt someone dropping this thing out of the sky. So I ended up taking it out to a friend's farmhouse and flew it around out there. And I was trying to figure out, what would I use this thing for? Well, I could spy on him through his window. That was kind of fun to play around with. I could, you know, peek over at his neighbor's property, but it was kind of boring. It looked exactly like his. I could check out his roof. That was the most useful thing to see how the roof
was. That's very good.
But
you've got to pay people to do that normally.
I think you just came up with one of the first commercial ventures right
Well,
there.
Check fact, your roof.
And commercial ventures are currently prohibited by the FAA, which has been ordered by the Obama administration and Congress to come up with official rules for drone use by 2015. And right now we're in this weird in-between period where regulators are trying to figure out, what do we do with the potential in this technology? And for the moment, they've said no commercial use, because people have come up with all kinds of things other than looking at roofs. You could real estate is one where you take aerial views of houses, but also there's something called the taco copter that's been proposed. It delivers a taco to you. Pizza delivery via drone. If you Google
that's not bad.
Drone pizza, you'll find a video of people in Germany who have already least launched a prototype to deliver pizza to you via drone. So you can think of all kinds of things that a drone might do. And the FAA has said, hang on a second, we need some regulations for this before people start trying to make money in this way domestically. Never mind, we need some privacy restrictions in place, because that same drone that's hypothetically, and I don't know if this will ever be allowed to happen, dropping a pizza on your doorstep can also be surveilling your house.
You know, when Portland built their gondola, the people in the Corbett neighborhood were very upset that they could look, people would be looking down into their backyards, and the rules were too bad. That they that could happen.
Well, that gets into this whole question of who owns the airspace above your house. I mean, that is going to be an issue with these, no doubt. No doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. I mean, a related issue came up a few years ago, which shows you, which was whether or not it turned out that you don't really own your own rainwater. That was an issue that came up a few years ago.
Would you like mine back then?
and the privacy issues are always interesting that way. I mean, they tried to stop the Burt Gilman Trail from being built for the same reason. People didn't want the public looking into their backyards.
The whole adjacent.
And people weren't flying over the backyard, but it brought
you could peer in from the side because you're there in the public space adjacent.
Now, I don't think this would happen in the case of drones. In the case of the Burt Gilman, all the people who were against having the trail built found that their property values went way up as a result of the trail. So they ended up being happy about it.
Could happen.
There was just a Senate hearing on drones and privacy. And Al Franken and Dianne Feinstein and some of the senators that you've probably heard of were imagining all the potential uses and privacy invasions. And Al Franken was saying, with reference to a mosquito-sized drone, because there are really tiny drones that have been built now. God help us if a 13-year-old kid gets hold of one of those. And Senator Dianne
God help who?
Yeah, well, 13-year-old girls to start with. But Dianne Feinstein, who's on the Senate Intelligence Committee, was saying, I've seen what drones can do. You can imagine the drone video that she's watched already, the military application video. And she expressed a lot of concern about what people domestically would do with drones, even if you create really robust laws saying this is what you can and can't do. You know, people break the rules all the time. And the difference, there are a lot of analogies made to the PC, the arrival of the PC and the PC boom and people worrying about that and what it would do. There are also analogies made to the first appearance of cars or manned aircraft where, you know, drone enthusiasts will say, well, people worried about all those things and had nightmare scenarios and it didn't turn out so bad. But the difference here is that a PC was not airborne, right? It sat on your desk. And a car and a piloted aircraft had a huge built-in disincentive to creating mayhem with it. You're sitting in the thing driving it or piloting it, and you're going to cause some serious harm to yourself if you start to cause harm to other people with it. And that's a huge break on, you know, destructive action. But with a drone like this, you've taken that break away potentially. The drone, you know, exists at a remove from the operator. And we've talked about this a lot with overseas drone strikes. But now, potentially, every citizen is going to have the opportunity to encounter this reality where you have a machine that acts in the world as your proxy at a remove from you, and its interaction with the physical environment doesn't affect your physical well-being.
All right. Yeah. Drones. We'll take a break, and we'll just be flying drones around. We won't even have to come into the studios. This is Weekday.
The show drones on in a moment.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, how a filibuster, supposedly the definition of content-free political speech, is having an impact.
I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast.
Rand Paul's recent 13-hour anti-drone filibuster is having an impact that news reporting has not. This week on the Media.
Sunday night at 6 o'clock on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from the Snoqualmie Tribe Fund, caring about community stewardship and culture. Proud supporters of the National Parks Conservation Association. More about the Snoqualmie Tribe and its community investments, programs, and services is at SnoqualmieTribe.com.
54 degrees in Seattle, and here comes the sun. Forecast calls for sun this afternoon with a high of 60 and then sun all weekend. The EPA is looking at new rules intended to help reduce smog. We'll have more on that in the news at 11.
So I'll be real quick. Just a couple of emails. Eli will respond, and then we'll move on. One was from one said, imagine planning departments for unpermitted construction. And as for shooting it down, as she asked, do you have air rights over your property that delimited in deeds? And then Lori and Don wrote, I received one for Christmas. You can have my drone when you pry it from my cold, dead hand. And Scott says, I fly radio-controlled drones myself as a hobby. He put it in quotes. People have been doing it for years with cameras. The multi-rotor looks cool in sci-fi, but people have been remotely flying planes with cameras for years. How about we stop calling every radio-controlled toy a drone? Come to 60-Acre Park any day to meet folks flying, having fun flying them and learning from them with no nefarious schemes in mind. That was from Scott.
And this is a good point. The drone industry and the drone enthusiasts will say, please don't call this a drone. It's an unmanned aerial vehicle. And people who have experiences like the person you just read the email from will say, yeah, what's the difference between this and a radio-controlled aircraft? And there isn't a huge difference at the moment. I'm essentially controlling this drone remotely from my iPhone, and every action it makes is related to me tilting the iPhone back and forth.
So cool.
If I tilt the iPhone forward, it flies forward. If I tilt it backward, it flies backward. But in the process of reporting this story, I went to a contest that is being held in North Dakota. It's the granddaddy of all amateur drone building contests. And what these young engineers, and I followed a team from Oregon State University, were doing was building drones that can fly autonomously using equipment available to any American. And so these students, these are people in their 20s, would take a Parrot like this, or would take off-the-shelf drone parts, or would create their own drone. And then they would add easily available artificial intelligence systems and computer equipment to it, lightweight stuff. And they would send it off on a mission, and it would be as if I put this iPhone down completely and the drone was flying itself on a pre-programmed mission, or just reacting to its environment in a way that it had been programmed to do. And so these drones in this contest flew through this mock intelligence agency that was set supposedly in a foreign country. So you can see kind of the potential military application. And they fly through the window. No one's controlling them. They sense where the walls are. They keep a certain distance from the walls. They search constantly for something that they're pre-programmed to search for. In this case, a flash drive that the drone was supposed to steal. And then they turn themselves around, mapping the interior all the while, and fly back out through the window. No one in this contest was able to steal the flash drive, but there was a drone from Michigan that was able to fly through the window on its own autonomously, map the entire interior of this multi-room base with a twisting hallway, and fly back out on its own. And again, that's with no one controlling the thing.
So Let's not arm those.
That is coming.
That's the construction project that didn't have the permit situation right there.
Say, first of all, they can access the whole article in the magazine on an app. When we talk about drones that the Pentagon flies and fires, they don't have 10-minute battery life. How far away are these drones from having longer battery life? Did you do any research on that?
That's one of the barriers right now to drone technology, personal drone technology, taking the next leap. And if you think about how long we waited for the time in between, you know, those cell phones with those giant batteries and the smartphones we have now, you know, it's probably some period of time like that. Eventually, the answer is we don't know the answer, but eventually we will get long-lasting, small batteries that can power one of these for longer than they can right now, longer than 10 minutes. The military drones that you're talking about run on fuel similar to what a plane would run on.
Oh, of course.
But yes, to answer the other question about how you can read this article, it's at the magazine. It's the-magazine.org if you want to look online for it, or if you just go to the app store on your phone, you can download the app for the magazine and read it that way.
And are you going to be able to post that video of flying the drone around the studio?
Yeah. I've figured out how to fly the drone from my iPhone. I have not, and people will laugh at me, figured out how to get the video off my iPhone and onto YouTube, but I'm sure that's very easy.
Back to the instructions.
I've also posted at The Stranger today a request for, you know, things that I might do with this drone, and I'm gonna post in the coming days and weeks things that I found for this drone to do on the Stranger's blog. I'll let you know.
Yeah, that's very funny. All right, and by the way, Leonardo, the flying pizza delivery helicopter that you said I could Google, and of course I did, seems like it takes
takes a long time to get that pizza.
Well, first, after the 10 minutes, you know, they got to drop it and cool it, then reheat it, go back.
All right, that drone was pleasant to talk about. Always good to bring in a toy. What? To shift topics. Oh, may I make a ridiculous transition and segue? Because I have become a master of that. You know who could use the drone? The people who are debating the height limits at South Lake Union.
I was going to say this would solve the Space Needle view problem. You know, everybody has their own drone. They can just pop it up over the skyscraper and there's the needle.
All right. City Council debated the South Lake Union rezone from, the proposal initially was 24 stories. And then the council's talking about 16 stories. The other thing they are debating is should they make developers pay more for going up higher and then use that money. They really want to use a little carrot and stick approach. Get them to actually use that money or instead of paying it, build in their buildings, on site, affordable housing for people who are making $30,000 to $60,000 a year. They're going to take that up in more detail and vote on it on Monday. What do you think of what we're seeing down this debate about South Lake Union?
Well, first of all, with an area so dramatically in transition, there's obviously going to be a lot of heated debate about what it's going to look like. You know, just the presence of Amazon in that neighborhood is changing it so dramatically, like just before your very eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm not counting the take your dog to work day thing either, which is changing it too. But, you know, this reminds me of years ago when they were trying to debate density. They would always want something at the street level, some amenity, some approachable amenity at street level so that you didn't have big, tall towers that didn't do anything for the residents or the businesses that were around it. And that's what the debate kind of reminds me of.
What do you think? And are you comfortable with what you're seeing down there? Would you be bothered by a 16 or 24 story tower on Mercer near Lake Union?
Well, the Stranger has been a big proponent of density. It's environmentally smart. It's the future of cities. And it seemed to me in reading about this that there is some room for compromise. I mean, there was talk of setting one or a few of the towers back a little bit so that from the park down there you can still view the Space Needle, and then letting the other towers go. And that seems to me at least like a good compromise. I did like the notion that was enshrined in the legislation or rule, I guess, that was passed by the City Council several years ago that protected certain views from certain parks around the city, you know, certain iconic views. And I think we talked about this on a previous show, that when that rule from the City Council came down, the South Lake Union Park actually didn't exist yet in its current form, and so the view from there of the Space Needle was not officially protected. But it does seem like the council, if it got to do that now, would have protected that view in a more robust way and maybe, you know, following through on the spirit of that law, which everyone seems to think was a good idea, we can find a way to have the towers, set one or two of them back in a way that allows for people to still have views from that park, maybe not from every single spot in that park, of the Space Needle, and let everyone else buy a drone and send it up over the tower.
Oh, that's what we'll need. You've been covering this.
yeah, I have been looking at it, and I think there are all kinds of pieces of it. Basically, the idea that of encouraging development in South Lake Union and allowing the heights to go higher than previously. The proposal came from the city. It's being vetted by the council. I don't think there's anybody who really questions the value of density. It's all a matter of execution. And so the debate has taken a whole, I mean, there are a whole bunch of different aspects to it. So there's a historic preservation aspect that has to do with transfer of development rights and various incentives to people who have properties that could be adapted. There are a lot of potential landmarks in South Lake Union, believe it or not. So that's one slice of it. The Space Needle has a concern. A big concern, of course, is the affordable housing element, which is there are multiple proposals how do you get developers both encourage them to develop, but also get money back that can go into providing actual low income or affordable housing. And that's a matter of degree. And you hear San Francisco brought up a lot in that context as a city that's been fairly aggressive about requiring.
Well, stick with the view, because I'm going to come right back to you with the question of the cost. But in terms of the view, the density, they're not just talking, of course, about towers at the lake, but they're talking about 40-story towers further up on the other end of this, you know, Seattle Times area. Matter of fact, I think that Seattle Times building, though it has historic preservation status, that site may be developed into a very large tower.
Yeah.
Do you have a problem with that?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think the Space Needle folks are arguing this. In fact, I know they're not. They raise concerns that have specifically to do with what their interest is, and I don't think. And I think in general, I think people like the idea of being able to see the Space Needle. No one has a right to see the Space Needle. I don't think anybody's arguing that. Although I think the argument often gets
Frazier has a right.
Yeah, Frazier, of course. Yeah, of course. He has a view no one in Seattle has ever had. and so I think that the main concern is that, you know, can you, with setbacks on certain streets and ordinance that might protect the view from at least the new park, you know, I think those are kind of various, Eli alluded to, very kind of reasonable compromises. I think in terms of having that be the sole measure of how high you let things go, I don't think that's going to be the determining factor. And there is a philosophical question about how you and where you allow buildings to go high. And one of the arguments that people who've had a problem with the South Lake Union zoning plan is that that the buildings ought to get shorter.
Step down to
the water.
Cake thing.
And the reason that is that preserves valuable views for more people. And so if you allow very large buildings right near the water, you block a lot, not just Space Needle views, and that is in some ways the least important, but views of Lake Union or other things, which are potentially valuable to other developers. So
citizens too.
So I think, you know, coming up with a reasonable plan and reasonable compromises that look at providing value that the free market wouldn't allow for people who are low income or members of the public who are out enjoying the streets, the walkable streets, enjoying the new park, et cetera. I think those are all really valid concerns. I think it's good that the city council is going over that, in some detail. It'll be very interesting to see where they come down.
You want to talk about that?
I was just going to say, before our eyes, it's almost like you can feel downtown stretching big, tall, northward. It's going to be a different looking city. And you can't.
And Fairview is going to be a very different looking street
where
you
have worked. It'll be very different. It's getting more crowded as we speak. But, I also feel the mayor's race a little bit in here with candidates trying to position themselves very carefully so that they don't seem, too dense. Not too hot, not too cold.
No, they all seem too dense.
Just right.
All right. So here, let's talk about that question of the charge, of the cost, the pay in lieu of fee. Niklokatas is the most expensive, and then it steps down from there through Burgesses and
expensive to developers.
Expensive to developers. It's basically asking developers to take smaller profit, and the developers are saying we won't get the profit without with a fee this high. So that's we don't know what the numbers are really and how people determine profit, but philosophically, Nick is saying either build affordable housing there. Or let's actually make this fee a real fee so that we can afford to build affordable housing and not just low-income housing, which is what we've been doing. What if that's the debate that I'm curious about?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is the debate. And it's complicated because the argument is if you set the fee too high, developers will have an incentive to develop elsewhere. Or
develop shorter buildings.
Shorter buildings so they can avoid those costs. And so you have to strike a balance. Philosophically, I think Niklokata is more right than wrong. I mean, I think that I think creating a mechanism that helps solve the a problem that's exacerbated by the development, and doing that in a way that's as concurrent with the development as possible, is philosophically the way to go. And I think the idea that you can build your way to affordability by and I agree with Licata saying, I mean, that's essentially Reagan trickle down free market. It's just, well, if we let them build as tall as we want, as much as we want, there'll be an affordable house for everybody. But that's not the way the market really works, because they're going to want to build to maximize their profits. And so you have to find a way, I think, of getting a social benefit off of it, or multiple social benefits as you can, without scaring them away.
So let me ask you, as the stranger representative here, because you said stranger supports density, mm-hmm. but at the same time, stranger supports affordable housing for people who are making $30,000 to $60,000,
right,
in the city.
Right.
You know, somebody's got to pull a trigger here. Somebody's going to take, as they like to say lately, a haircut. Either it's going to be the citizen by losing the views or the affordability, or it's going to be the developer who may, as you say, she may walk away from the project.
Well, again, I think there may be a happy medium, or a medium that makes everyone a little unhappy. But this idea that developers should help pay for low-income housing when they get good deals like they're about to get in South Lake Union makes sense, and I think the stranger has long supported. I haven't been down in the nitty-gritty of exactly how much they should pay for X amount of height.
None of us go there, because it gets complicated fast.
Yeah, but if you're asking whether I think this is a good idea for developers in certain circumstances to have to fund low-income housing as a condition.
Affordable housing.
Sorry,
I mean, we should
affordable make, housing.
Because that is the distinction these guys are making. The people are saying, why can't a developer build housing that somebody who's making $30,000 a year can afford? And, of course, we could all point to the little apartments that are coming up around. The little
Those
rooms.
Some of them are going to be very expensive.
Yes, but some of them are theoretically supposed to be.
Those are also going to be an interesting issue in the mayor's race.
Yeah.
We've seen at least council members on different sides of it so far. Tom Rasmussen, who's not obviously running for anything, has taken a stand against them that's been pretty controversial, at least on our blog.
Yeah. Well, he would not say he took a stand against them. He just wants to explore the options.
In some ways, there's a tug of war between those who are running for either mayor or reelection and those who don't have to worry about it, too. Don't forget. So some are just saying, you know, I'm trying to provide a conscience and an image of the city that I can be comfortable with. And by the way, I don't have to worry about running.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some other issues. This is Weekday on KUOW Seattle. At Eli J. Sanders is where he tweets, and you can find his work there. Weekday on KUOW, our Facebook page, has ominous video of the drone flying, and then later Eli will figure out how to post. You could email us. I bet some of you know how to do it right away. Eli will post his video of the parrot's nose eye view of the drone flying in our studios. Knut Berger is here from Crosscut, author of a book on Space Needle. Joni Balter is here. What's your Twitter handle for the politics blog?
At J. Balter. Oh,
at J. Balter.
At C times Paul.
At C times Paul.
Yes.
And H.A. Balter. At,
yeah.
AJ, yes. At J. Balter. Easy for me to say. This is Weekday.
This is Mara Liasson from NPR News. When it comes to the news, KUOW and NPR are dedicated to bringing you the whole story, beyond the headlines and sound bites. And your support makes that possible. Mail in your gift or go online to KUOW.org and pledge your support today. Thanks.
Mayan speaking immigrants from the Mexican state of Yucatan have a passion for a sport they call bachabola.
Bachabola, yeah.
Better known here as
baseball.
Baseball is so popular in California's Mayan communities that they form their own bachabola league. We take in a game next time on The World.
That's later today on KUOW's Afternoon News Magazine, which airs from 3 to 7 p.m.
Support for KUOW comes from Village Theater, presenting Trails, now through April 21st. Two childhood friends who haven't spoken in more than 10 years embark on the journey of hiking the Appalachian Trail to fulfill a promise made to a woman they both love. Tickets at villagetheater.org.
54 degrees in Seattle. We expect to top out today at 60 with plenty of sun. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 10:44. Nelson Mandela is still in the hospital with a lung infection. They say he's in good spirits and doing well with treatment. We'll get a full update in about 20 minutes.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Eli Sanders at Eli J. Sanders. This is his Twitter feed. Look for some pictures and weekday on KUOW. Look for some video there of his drone. At Jay Balter, at C times Paul.
Just say it fast. It's like Italian.
C times Paul. For her Twitter workings and her writings. Knut Berger is at Crosscut and has a Facebook page, which you can find and look for.
People have, listeners have friended me. So
right, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, this is like lightning round time because we got SCOTUS, we got the budget.
That's right.
We got some garbage. You were in D.C.?
I was in D.C. last week.
You didn't go hear the SCOTUS arguments on
No, Donna, that was you? That was earlier this week, but I wasn't that already left. But I got an interesting sense there. You know, a lot of people you talk to, everybody's trying to parse the various words that were said by all the various justices, and there were some very interesting things that were said. My favorite was the skim milk line from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But, you know, there were a lot of analysis, but one sense I got talking to many people was simply that, yes, it matters what the court says. Everyone is hanging on this, and they'll be interested to hear what the court says in June. But there is this sort of inevitability to this, that time will take care of this issue. Time is already taking care of this issue. Was one thing I heard a lot of people say that. And that's like that article we read, and I can never pronounce the guy's name, Chris Silliza, talking about it doesn't even matter that much because voter sentiments are changing so fast, and so they are overtaking kind of the legal debate.
What do you think, Eli, of the argument that says court should go slow, kick back Prop 8 because those guys didn't have any standing, and then California will do what it does, and don't overturn DOMA because that will politicize the debate too soon?
Well, the law is the law, and it's up to the Supreme Court to interpret the law. I think on Prop 8, it looks like they are going to kick it back, so to speak, and say, if you were counting the votes and kind of trying to divine where all the justices stood during that hearing, it sounds like there's five of them who are going to say, we don't have this case doesn't have standing to be heard by us. In other words, the decision of the California Supreme Court about Prop 8 stands, and Prop 8 is unconstitutional, and that's that. You'll have marriage in California without any need for interference from this U.S. Supreme Court. On DOMA, it sounded like there were probably five justices who found it unconstitutional, that it was creating multiple different definitions of marriage in an unfair way that is not supportable. And so I would expect them, well, I would hope that they would strike it down. I don't know what to expect. You never know what to expect from the U.S. Supreme Court. It's very dangerous to, you know, predict. I would hope they strike it down. It seems plausible that they would. And I'm not as worried about the political backlash. There's tremendous current harm that comes from this policy, and I think it's more important to end it sooner rather than, you know, later, just to satisfy people's feelings about not stoking a political backlash.
What do you think about that argument, Skip?
Well, I basically agree with Eli, and especially not trying to predict what they would do. And I don't even understand the intricacies.
These shows are tape recorded. They can come to haunt you.
Those kinds of arguments that I don't really understand very well. And I also think Joni's point about I think Eli's right that you want the change to happen as rapidly as possible on the legal front. And on the other side of it, I think it's a good sign that the culture has really shifted, and it's really gotten to, you know, it seems to be gaining momentum. And you could see that in the last week or so with the number of kind of conservative to centrist Democrats and even some conservative Republicans coming over on the issue of gay marriage. And that's telling you that people in swing districts, swing states and whatnot are following where the public is going in terms of change. And you know, one of the things that happens with change is it's incremental for a while and then suddenly it isn't. Suddenly you get to kind of a tipping point. It feels like we've really gotten or very close to a tipping point here. So I think the culture is going to going in the right direction.
Hmm. It's interesting to think about what the court takes back. I love the people who try to divine the...
Oh, he said this. Yeah. She said that.
Very difficult.
This is what it means.
It's quite fascinating.
Yes.
Jay Inslee proposed a budget in Washington State that, as I read it, Eli sort of comes pretty close to the things you've been talking about and writing about for the last few years in terms of tax breaks and tax incentives.
It was nice to see that perhaps, I mean, I don't mean to presume that Jay Inslee is reading everything I'm writing or listening religiously to Weekday, but maybe he is.
He had this drone that was hovering over your notebook.
Right, with a sign on it that says, cut some tax exemptions or else. It was good to see that Jay Inslee proposed eliminating tax loopholes as a way of bringing our budget shortfall into balance, because there is really no other way to do this that I see. He's committed to not raising new revenue, and so he's found some ways to get new revenue, but within the definition or a strict definition of his promise not to create new revenue. So he's extending the beer tax. That'll bring him a certain amount of money, or he would hope anyway, if he can get the legislature to go along with him. And then he's closing a lot of tax loopholes, which it's easier to do now that we had the Supreme Court ruling on the two-thirds majority. We just need a simple majority in both houses to close some of these $6.5 billion worth of tax loopholes that currently exist in our state. And by doing that, Inslee is able in his budget to make the state Supreme Court mandated down payment on education that was required by the McCleary decision. It's over $1 billion toward education that you get from closing these tax loopholes and extending the beer tax. Plus, he's able to deal with our over $1 billion budget deficit. I don't know that there's any other way for the state to grab hold of more than $2 billion very quickly than what Inslee is proposing.
They're going to grab hold of your bottled water instead.
They are right after your bottled water, but not your pop, if you remember that story.
Yeah, not your pop, which I thought was very interesting. All right, so the Republicans are in charge in the Senate.
And they said that this was a kick in the shins, that this particular, that all these loopholes. You have to consider also the history. Lawmakers almost every session talk about closing loopholes, and in the end they close fewer than they talk about, right? Because there are such powerful lobbying interests that come in for each and every one of those loopholes, and you can expect that to occur this time. But we have an interesting dynamic in Olympia. We have a House that agrees with the governor, and then you have the Senate Majority Coalition group that's going to disagree with this, clearly. And so quite the dynamic queued up here, because everybody wants more money for education. But how to get there? Through cuts, through closing loopholes. And so here is this very long list of loopholes that would be either taxes that would either be extended or loopholes that would be closed. And, you know, to get to the magic number, it's going to be interesting to see which lobbyist is able to say, no, you don't want that one. You don't want that one.
What lobbyists do you think are going to be successful in this one? I mean, there's so many different lobbies involved. And we saw the lobbyists were successful with gun control so far. They've been pretty successful with the with climate change legislation to some extent. I just wonder who will be the most successful.
One lobby that is well positioned for success is the newspaper lobby. They've got a tax loophole that the governor has put on the chopping block. Places like the Seattle Times, as the Seattle Times noted in its own coverage of Inslee's budget proposal, benefit from a tax loophole in Washington State. You wonder whether the Seattle Times' tax loophole ending up on the chopping block by Inslee has anything to do, of course, I'm sure it doesn't, with the advertisements that the Seattle Times ran for Inslee's opponent, Rob McKenna. In any case, it probably wasn't a wise move if they were trying to preserve their tax break, at least with Inslee.
Yeah, but it's not. It's, you know, there's so many bigger tax breaks out there with so many bigger lobby
something
groups
like
behind
there
it,
were
right?
roughly 40 industries that would see their B&O tax breaks trimmed according to this budget. So there on that one, you know, I was on this taping of a TV show of four former governors, and it was really interesting because every one of them had wanted not to raise taxes, and every one of them got themselves in a position. Most interestingly, if you think back and read back, which is what I did, for John Spellman, you know, he had gone to a debate against Jim McDermott, and he brought out, this is famous, he brought out in the middle of a debate a waffle because he thought McDermott, if elected governor back then, was going to waffle on taxes. But the waffle was turned against him later because when he became governor at that time, that early 80s was the worst recession since the Depression. And so he had to raise taxes. And then all the cartoons, if you remember, put him as the waffle man.
Selling waffles. 4,400 taxpayers will be affected by the repeal of the sales tax for non-residents, the exemption for non-residents. Oregonians will no longer be coming up to Vancouver to shop.
To shop. Well, you know, those things do have real effects when you look at the dollars attached to them, and there is $100 million here and $100 million there. I mean, it will have a real effect on people, but I think you can make a very compelling case that a beer tax versus paying for more kindergarten, I think kindergartens and educators are going to win that argument.
Even with Senate Republicans?
I think you can come up with a whole package that they will compromise on, yes. And if not, we'll find out. But, you know, the governor, I would encourage people to go to the Jay Inslee's website and you click on the little PDF that says the governor's budget priorities. And he lays out areas where he's increasing spending. He lays out areas where he's cutting spending. It's very interesting to see some of the things that are coming back into the budget. We talk about cutting tax breaks for businesses on the one hand, but he's also spending more money in certain areas and promoting business in Washington State. He's bringing back some funding for state tourism, for example.
Did you see the only Republican statewide elected official, Kim Wyman, liked Inslee's budget? Why? Because of exactly what you're talking about. It renewed money for libraries and the historical center.
Exactly. There was some funding things. One of the big ones is instead of state parks being zeroed out of the budget,
yes,
which is proposed after the last biennium. Inslee's got most of their request in his budget, which is something like $24 million or whatever. So, you know, what now people, I mean, the House and the Senate are perfectly, they capable of ignoring the governor's priorities.
And have done so for many years.
They have their own priorities, but you can see that in terms of the basic approach, that the House and the governor are relatively in sync, and they're proposing something I think that they think is responsible. And the real test is going to see how it goes down in the Senate and what that negotiation – that's where the actual budget will get created. It'll be interesting to see.
One thing our Republican Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, might also be excited about if she can find in Inslee's budget, and it seems like there may be enough money in it for this, is a return of the state voters guide. Remember, that got cut due to budget shortfalls, and maybe with this budget proposal, if it gets through, we'll actually have a voters guide again in the state to help people elect good legislators.
A physical voters guide.
Because they had the online.
But we have problems with access with the online guide. One of the proposed loopholes that would be closed that I think is most relatable is the break that you get when you trade in a vehicle and buy a new vehicle. I think in addition to the beer tax, that's going to be one of the most talked about ones. The idea right now, or the fact right now, is that if you bring in an old vehicle, you buy a new one, if I understand it right, you don't get taxed on the difference between the value of your old car and the value of your new car. And I think this even applies to boats and so on.
Let's just look at it this way. The proposal would limit the exclusion of trade-in value from retail sales to $10,000. Before, there was no limit.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't capture that money. All right, real quick.
And now is the 100th anniversary of the state parks, and so there's sort of a sentimental feeling about restoring some of that funding after the Discover Pass, which was supposed to save the parks, didn't exactly work.
All right, I wanted to talk about compost and smelly garbage, but that lightning round was not much of a lightning round. But are you going to write about your tour of this transfer station?
Yeah.
All right. And then so next week when we're fundraising, we shall talk about smelly compost and garbage. I'm sure we will be able to make some connections there. We'll talk to you guys next week during our fund drive. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in again.
At Eli J. Sanders, at Jay Balter. That's their Twitter feeds. You can find Knute on the Facebook. and at crosscut.com. Weekdays produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Pagano, Andy Hurst, Amin Al-Sadi, our Daniel Anthony Goodwin, our intern, Bernard Ouellette is your host and ours as well for the rest of this day.
Voila.
Voila. Thank you.
North Korea's latest threats and how the U.S. is responding. In the news in a moment, KUOW-FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, recognizing people have a choice about where they're treated for cancer. At SCCA, doctors from Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, UW Medicine, and Seattle Children's unite to turn cancer patients into cancer survivors. More at seattlecca.org.
This week in This American Life, Andrea's head tingles, and I mean it literally tingles, when she hears the sound of typing, the flipping of pages, or people talking like this.
This is gentle whispering.
Now then, barely touch the canvas.
I'm going to share something personal.
Andrea always thought that she was the only one who felt these tingles. But was she?
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.